Tribune endorses Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson.
The Trib's John McCormick called the endorsement unorthodox and a protest against Republican Trump, too far to the right on issues, and Democrat Clinton, too far left.
But the job of negotiating our new relationship is the job of the government. Because we voted in the referendum as one united kingdom. And we will leave the European Union as one united kingdom.
The New York Times obtaining documents that reveal Trump claimed a loss of more than $900 million in 1995, potentially setting up years without paying federal income tax.
There's no opt-out from Brexit. And I will never allow divisive nationalists to undermine the precious union between the four nations of our united kingdom.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Welcome to October, another business day. It is October 3rd, 2016, another business month for a lot of us, the first broadcast of October. Glad to have you along. We have lots to talk about today. A new company that's a startup company that's forging the way through Chicago and making its way known across the country is called RippleShot. We've heard a lot about data breaches. Wouldn't it be nice to know that they're coming before they come and be able to prevent them? Well, that's what RippleShot does. We're going to talk to the CEO of the company next. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, let's get you caught up on all of the intel from around the globe. And we'll start first in Europe, where the markets seem to be generally higher this morning. The FTSE, the DAX, all up more than a percent. In Europe, that seems to be the going rate this morning. The DAX seems to be up the highest this morning, up 105 points. In Europe, or rather in Asia this morning, markets doing very well. The Nikkei leading the way, followed by the Hang Seng. The Nikkei up almost a full percent this morning. So is the Hang Seng. The Nikkei up 148 points. The Hang Seng up 287 points. In this country, Dow futures are pointing toward opening gains. When the bell rings a little bit later on, the Dow futures are up about 15 this morning. S&P futures are up a point, and the NASDAQ futures up as well. Gold and silver trading higher. Oil is also trading higher, $48.73 a barrel, up almost a full percent this morning. Well, you have heard about these data breaches. They're happening more and more often recently. There's a Chicago-based company that's out there trying to stop them before they get to companies with data they call RippleShot, with a new business and new science they call RippleShot. You'll want to stay tuned because it's interesting where the name came from as we get to our discussion with the CEO of the company. Con Tran is with us this morning. And Con, let's start out first by talking about all these data breaches. It seems like we don't go more than a day or two without a big one happening. Give us a sense of how significant this problem is, how big the data breach problem is globally and nationally.
Well, Steve, in the problem we're attacking is data breach and payment fraud, and that's a $300 billion problem for banks and merchants across the world.
$300 billion.
Right.
And it's not just their problem. It's our problem as consumers as well, because eventually we have to pay probably some of that. How does your company work, and what do you offer these companies to help them in this area?
Sure. Our solution is a machine learning fraud analytics platform that helps automate the detection of data breach and suspicious patterns to help banks and merchants reduce their fraud losses. What we do is we help detect a data breach 3 to 6 months before it's publicly known.
Now, I don't want to get into any of the secrets because, you know, we don't want to give anything away. These hackers know this anyway. But how do you do that? How do you stay kind of a step ahead or two of this?
Sure. What we have is a data feed that's proprietary to us into our network. And what we do with that is we monitor almost every single merchant in the U.S. on a daily basis, merchants that are online and offline, for early indication of suspicious patterns that can indicate potentially a data breach.
And so you probably know before they do that there's a problem.
We do. That's correct.
Is it safe to say that what you have created with RippleShot is sort of a mousetrap in a way?
Yeah, it's an early detection mousetrap.
Yeah. And is it something that these companies, you mentioned earlier that this is a $300 billion problem. I'm guessing that these companies, especially some small businesses, but the big ones too, they don't have the time and energy and resources to handle this. Is that a fair way to describe what they're up against?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the defenses and security defenses have gotten better over the years because of this problem. But in the reality for these merchants, it is not their number one job, right? For a retailer, their number one job is to sell, you know, if cost-effective products to consumers. So compared to a hacker, that's their full-time job. I think they're up against some very difficult competition.
I spoke recently with the Illinois Attorney General about cases she's working on. We won't get into specifics about companies that are involved in this, but she told me that a lot of these companies are not playing offense, that they're playing defense, and they're playing bad defense. And you say that this it's not their number one priority, but will it or should it be, or should it be an equal priority?
I think so, because at the end of the day, it is about serving the customer and the consumer. And to the extent that these data breaches and fraud are trickling down and affecting everyday life of a consumer, that is one of the and is starting to be one of the top priorities. And that's why RippleShot was created, is to help them play offense as opposed to defense.
Because as a consumer, if I am a customer of RippleShot, and you're selling me whatever product, if I'm hacked because of you, I'm not going to be your customer anymore. So it has a big effect, doesn't it? A potential impact?
Yeah, absolutely. So for big retailers, you know, they might survive a data breach because you still, at the end of the day, you still might have to go there and get your prescription drugs and let's say buy food. But for some smaller mom and pop retailers or medium sized retailers, the statistics are that if you have a publicly known data breaches, there's 60-70% chance that by the end of the year you may not be in business.
There are a couple of trends here that I'd like to ask you about. First of all, is there a geographic trend to where you're seeing these breaches happen?
It's funny you should ask, but the geographic trend happened to have a bullseye on the United States, right? Okay. Because of the chip and PIN that's been rolled out in Europe and Canada, the U.S. is just getting around to implementing chip and PIN. So most of the soft targets have been traditionally in the last 5 years and continue to be in the United States.
Is there a part of the United States where you see this more than another?
You know, it's funny because traditionally, you would see in the big marketplaces like California, actually Chicago, New York, Miami. But now we're seeing in softer, what we call softer targets, softer markets, smaller markets like Madison, Wisconsin, Austin, Texas, Kansas City, Jefferson, Missouri, for example. Where we think that there's lower hanging fruits for some of the hackers.
Con Tran in the CEO spotlight today. It's RippleShot, the company that's based in Chicago, detecting data breaches before they happen. We'll continue our conversation with Con as we continue on the opening bell this morning. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the Dow futures are up 18 points today. The S&P futures up just a point. The NASDAQ futures up two.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks rebounded Friday, the Dow gaining 165 points to close at 18,308. That came after the index cratered nearly 200 points the day before. The S&P 500 rose 17 on Friday. The NASDAQ picked up 42 points to finish at 5,312. Automakers report September new car sales today. Watch for a second consecutive monthly decline. Auto industry insiders, though, say traffic on the car lots is at a healthy level, with full-year sales expected to exceed 17 million vehicles. Electric vehicle maker Tesla Motors says global deliveries of its cars more than doubled in the third quarter to 24,500 compared with last year. That's despite a government investigation of Tesla's semi-autonomous autopilot system after a driver died in a Florida crash. The company that builds some of the world's best-known commercial aircraft is undergoing an internal shakeup. Airbus is cutting an unspecified number of management jobs in an attempt to improve its profitability. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 521. Welcome back to the program on the CEO Spotlight today. In the CEO Spotlight, Con Tran. The company is called RippleShot. We'll get to why it's named that in just a minute, but welcome back, Con. And our discussion before, we were talking briefly about this new chip and PIN technology that rolled out across Europe, is now rolling out across the U.S. That has not rolled out very well, has it? I mean, there's still a lot of concern about that, isn't there?
That's a fair assessment, right? I think it's a mixed bag so far. Theoretically, it is supposed to reduce fraud at the bricks and mortar, right, and also help protect your card. And to some certain extent, it does that, but you are seeing uneven results because you still experience fraud on your card. Mm-hmm. And also, the majority of the fraud is also going online. So as a consumer, you're still experiencing the fraud, and the merchants are seeing their e-commerce fraud balloon.
And some of these merchants, they're not upgrading their technology because you have to have that special reader for the new card, right?
Correct. And they're debating whether it is worth the cost for them to do that based on whatever fraud liabilities that they may incur. With a chip and PIN, the idea is that to be able to shift the liability or the fraud to the merchant if they don't have the chip and PIN, and people are trying to do that equation whether it's worth switching or not.
I recently was at a place and I stuck my card in and it didn't ask for the PIN. It just took the thing with me. So anybody who gets my card could have done that.
Right.
Is that one of the vulnerabilities of that?
Yeah. On top of that, exactly from a consumer standpoint, one of the problems in the United States is that we're actually not doing chip and PIN. We're doing chip and signature.
Yeah.
So really, the theory is great that with a chip and PIN, it's going to reduce your fraud losses. But the American consumer is so used to chip and signature that you're still vulnerable.
Give us a sense of, if you compare, because you mentioned earlier that some other countries are getting it. Give us a sense of how you've seen the hacking or the breaches compared to there to here. How different is it?
Sure. So we have historical statistics on Europe and Canada. And once they've introduced the chip and PIN, what happened is at the beginning, fraud did go down, right? But it just took a while for the fraudsters to figure out where to squeeze and where the vulnerabilities are. And it turns out that then a lot of fraud went online on e-commerce. And 5 years down the road, what we're seeing is that fraud actually did not go down. It actually went up. But most of it went to e-commerce, right? The difference in the United States is that in Europe and Canada, they're central government mandated, right? Over here, we have 50 states with different government structure. So it is not a government mandate to switch to chip and PIN. So it's making a very uneven rollout. So actually what we're seeing is a lot of uncertainty and chaos in the market probably for the next 3 to 5 years.
So business must be good for you in terms of selling this product to consumers. How are things going?
Things are going well, right? We are providing this service to banks and credit unions in probably 10 to 12 states in the United States right now.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing one industry over another come and get your help? Is it banks? Is it stores? Is it retailers? Is it other places?
It's both the financial institutions, the banks and credit unions, have been really hit hard over the last 5 years with data breaches. That's one market that I think we've made significant progress in. And the second market is merchants, and particularly e-commerce, where we're seeing a lot of demand for this type of solution.
I was surprised to read, as I was doing some research on you and your company, that grocery stores are like the biggest places where fraud happens. One of the biggest.
Yeah, so there's a couple things. Grocery stores is one of the places where data breach can happen to begin with. And one of the simple reasons is because a lot of people go there to shop, so there's a lot of credit card and debit card that are being used. Second, grocery store margins are razor thin, right? So they don't have a lot of money to invest in IT structure and IT technology, so it's an easy mark for fraudsters. And on the other hand, grocery stores also include our classification, the big boys like a Walmart. And so when you have somebody's credit card, one of the places you're going to go is Walmart to buy electronic goods, for example.
The landscape is changing such that the Apple Pay, the mobile payment system, PayPal's headed in that direction, others as well. Is this are they doing that because they feel safe enough and secure enough to proceed, or are they doing it because the technology is driving it?
In terms of mobile payment, the technology is driving it, right? I don't think that people are putting out a product because of security. They're putting out a product because they think that's how consumers want to shop in the future and pay for their goods.
Now, I know that your audience is companies that you want to sell your product to, Ripple Shot. But from a consumer standpoint of it, should I be using those payment systems?
Well, short of going back to cash, you will be using those payment systems.
So I have no choice.
Yes.
And the other thing, the two that surprises me, is that this may be a losing battle, right? this fighting of the breaches, that this may be just it may never be able to be stopped?
So I wouldn't call it a losing battle. I think that when you talk about age-old professions, I would say fraud is one of them. So it's been around since the dawn of history. So I just think I would call it an ongoing battle.
It's something, too, that we should all just be aware of and protect ourselves as much as possible.
Yes, that I agree. Just so that the same way that banks and merchants are getting new tools to help them with fraud, I think consumers have new digital tools, you know, checking your bank account, checking your alerts, checking your financial statements. It's just a new era, and we have to get used to that.
Do you use Apple Pay? Do you have these systems?
I do.
Yeah. So you feel like you have, I mean, if you weren't using them, then I wouldn't use them. I think it'd be a good barometer.
Yeah, no, I use them. I use that. I use credit cards. I use debit cards. And that's just the way business is today.
So how did you come up with the name Ripple Shot? Where did the creation of the name and the company start?
Sure. So I've been in fraud analytics and algorithms and machine learning for a very long time. I'm also, through some friends of mine, I've become a pretty passionate fly fisherman. And when I'm on the river and we're looking at fishing, you try to spot where the fish is. And you do that because sometimes you see a ripple. Mm-hmm. And where the ripple expands out, you kind of see where the center epic center is, and that's where the fish is. That's the same concept when we try to detect a data breach, right? When we see alerts rippling out from a center, we're trying to find where that center is, and that's how we came with the name Ripple Shot.
And so if you were having to describe to me a quiet lake full of trout, would there be a lot of these ripple shots? If in this current scenarios that we've been talking about?
Absolutely. You know, let's say we're talking about a lake with lots of trout, right? At a certain time of day, with the flies coming up, you'll see them come to the surface and feed and off the surface. So you'll see a lot of ripples. And to the extent that's the same with the marketplace today with data breaches.
Con Tran is the CEO of Ripple Shot. You can find them at rippleshot.com, at rippleshot on Twitter. The CEO of the company that's helping detect the ripples before they become tsunamis in the data breach world.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. The business of health this morning, keeping us all healthy, including new moms. This report jumped off the screen at us when we saw it recently, and so we thought we would do a segment on it and tell you about it. It is important. A report published in the September issue of the journal Obstetrics and Gynecology found that from 2000 to 2014, the maternal mortality rate for 48 states and Washington, D.C. increased 27%, from close to 19 deaths per 100,000 live births to 24 deaths per 100,000 live births. In Texas, the rate doubled between 2010 and 2012. So what's going on here? Let's bring in Dr. Eugene DeClercq, a professor and assistant dean of community health sciences at Boston University School of Public Health. Dr. DeClercq, welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thank you, Steve.
So this really did jump out at us, and I guess the question we have to start this conversation off is, what's going on here?
There's probably a couple things going on that we need to be aware of. One is that we're doing a better job of measuring than we have before. I know that's not an exciting reason, but that's part of it. The reason we actually did the study in the first place was because the U.S. had changed the way it measures maternal mortality, and because states were slow to adopt the new changes, the national rate had not been published for almost 10 years. So we went to the state data and worked up the state data to come up with a national estimate and found it to be higher than had generally been expected, mostly because they were doing a better job of identifying cases of maternal death.
So that we've identified the cases, but still there is the causes behind this. What are you finding are the causes behind this?
The leading causes of maternal deaths are hemorrhage, a whole array of vascular and cardiac-related factors. Toxemia is a factor, infection is a factor, anesthetic problems are all contributing to this. And while we haven't gone through, this study looked at the what, the next study is going to get in more of the why. It appears that most all of those things are increasing. nothing. In other words, it's not one single factor that's jumping out and driving the rate, but rather an increase in all of these smaller factors.
And so when we also, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's also important to remember two things about the demographics of maternal mortality in the United States. One is there's a huge disparity between black and white deaths. Black deaths are about three times higher than white deaths in, among women who die in the first 42 days from pregnancy through 42 days after birth. The second is that the United States, in comparison to other countries, fares very poorly. And even if you just limited it to the white mothers, we would still rank behind almost every other industrialized country. So there's a combination of maternal factors here and probably systems factors.
And so, as you go and try to find that why as you move forward with research, what is your gut telling you about the why? Is it that, that something is failing our mothers in the systems, in the hospitals? You talked about infection and those other things. It seems like our hospitals may be failing in some areas.
It may be more a question of public health system failing. There have been some really notable efforts. In California, for instance, they've been working up a package of changes for hospitals to deal with hemorrhage, which is one of the leading causes. And that's been adopted widely throughout the country. But a lot of these difficulties go back to the prenatal period. And what's really necessary here is a focus on women's health, and not just while they're pregnant, but identifying problems during their pre-pregnancy period. Or maybe to think of it another way, that it's not the pre-pregnancy period, it's simply focusing on women's health per se, and making an effort to try to address some of the problems that they may come into pregnancy with.
It is stunning to hear you say that we're behind every other country when it comes to this. That doesn't seem like something to hold our hats on, and it seems sort of out of place. Where do you think we derailed along the way, or where is it that we've been this way for a while and the reporting hasn't been good enough, as you said earlier?
We've been this way for a long time. We're actually behind most other countries on most of the other major measures, life expectancy, infant mortality, and such. So that's not a new factor. We may have done a little bit better identifying it now, but it's important to keep in mind the countries we're comparing to also have been doing the same kinds of improvements in their reporting as well. And the difference between us and the other industrialized countries is that their rates of maternal mortality are basically staying flat as they both improve their systems and do a better job of identification. In the U.S., what's happened is as we've done a better job of identification, our rate has actually gone up. There was a very interesting study out of Illinois, which I would think your listeners would be particularly interested in, that came out about 2 years ago, that looked at the preventability of maternal mortality. And in cases in Illinois, they reviewed cases, some 600 cases in Illinois over the years. And what they found was that about a third of them would be preventable. And so that may be a way to target those efforts.
Is there something that mothers who are thinking of either women who are thinking of having children or mothers that are currently on that road headed toward another pregnancy, perhaps for their first, is there something that they can take in hand and control for themselves in this area? Or are they sort of, setting themselves up to be victims of this system that doesn't seem to be working very well?
Well, it's important to remember that we're talking about a rare event. Our rates may be higher than other countries, but we're talking somewhere in the order of 20 per 100,000. So women shouldn't start off the pregnancy thinking that it's a huge health risk, but it's real. And the best things they can do is focus on two things. One, their own health, to do a better job of their health on a general basis. One of the factors, it's not the leading factor, but one of the factors that contributes to this has been the rise in obesity in the United States. So women taking care of their own health would be one piece, but the other would be to focus again on prenatal care and postpartum care. You know, people think maternal mortality are deaths literally during the birth process itself, but remember, this goes out to either 42 days or 1 year, depending on the different measures that are used. And oftentimes what we find is women drop off the system once they've had their baby. Literally, in some states, they lose coverage 3 months after they've had their child. And so part of it is that we need to focus on their health before they get pregnant and after they've had their baby.
You talked about some of the factors there, obesity, one of them. How big of an issue is women waiting later to have children? We see that as becoming, I don't want to call it a trend, but it seems like more and more women are doing that. Is that a danger area as well?
It's the rates are higher for older mothers, and that's a combination in some cases of those mothers having had several children. But the other factor is rates are higher for older mothers. So Mike, that contributes to it to a bit, although the increase in age of mothers has sort of leveled now for a while, and it doesn't seem to have changed the rates particularly as a result.
Dr. Eugene DeClercq, a professor and assistant dean of community health sciences, Boston University School of Public Health. Doctor, we'd like to follow your work as you go off and discover that why and what as your research continues.
That's great.
All right.
Hopefully we can provide more answers.
Hopefully so. Thank you for being with us on the Opening Bell. 547 this morning, 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, 551 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing toward solid gains this morning. However, tepidly so, they're moving in that direction. Just 11 points to the higher this hour. S&P futures and NASDAQ futures a little bit higher as well this morning. Let's see what commodities are doing. And ag this morning, good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we start this trading week, it could be a tough one for wheat producers and for hog producers. After those reports of last Friday, the pig crop report showing 70.9 million hogs and pigs on U.S. farms, up 2% from September a year ago and up 4% from June 1st of this year, according to the quarterly pig crop report. And the analyst for Archer Financial Services, Dennis Smith, said the report definitely a bearish report. Iowa hog producers accounted for the largest inventory among the states at 22 million head. North Carolina and Minnesota had the second and third largest inventories with 9.1 million and 8.2 million head, respectively. But it could be a tough trade in live hog futures today. Meanwhile, in the grain market, U.S. Department of Agriculture said the wheat supplies ballooned to the biggest in nearly 30 years during the summer months, topping expectations because of a 12% jump in production and weak demand on the export market. The wheat stocks as of September 1, 2,527,000,000 bushels, the biggest since 1987. Corn stocks at 1,738,000,000 bushels, the biggest since 2006. Could be a tough day in the wheat and corn market at the Board of Trade. Tomorrow is opening day, World Dairy Expo, Madison, Wisconsin. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. A couple of other stories making news this morning. Facebook has launched a light version of its Messenger chat app overseas. It will be in emerging markets where many people use older phones that don't have enough room to store or have the ability to run the full featured application because of slower internet speeds and other issues. Also this morning, the new robot from Japanese automaker Toyota Motor Corporation can't do much but chatter in a high-pitched voice. Still, it is $400, and it's hitting the consumer market today. It apparently comes with names Kibo, Hope, and Robot. Supposedly has the smarts of a five-year-old. This will undoubtedly take the place of the dog, the robot dog market there. I don't know if you've been following this, but a few years ago, one of the makers of the robot dogs decided to stop building these and stop making them, advancing them along, putting new software in them. And people were actually having robot dog funerals. They were so attached to the robot dogs in Japan that they were having funerals for their dogs because eventually they stopped working without an update. So hopefully these new little robots will help. Again, they're from Toyota, about $400 hit the market today. The Economy Day Ahead calendar and forecast sponsored by Associated Bank. Now, this is what we think is coming up that could drive the markets later on this morning. Several interesting economic and business reports. The biggest among them, the Institute for Supply Management, releases its manufacturing index for September. The Commerce Department will report on construction and spending in August. Also today, automakers will release their vehicle sales for September. All of those big drivers of the markets, the first and last of those, automakers and supply management, the two that could drive the markets as we head toward the opening bell. We will continue to follow your money throughout the morning here on 720 WGN. And if you haven't noticed, we've been welcoming a new sponsor to our program today. Very happy to have Associated Bank on board. We think you'll enjoy some of the things we have planned, things to make you think as we move forward in our relationship with Associated Bank. Happy to have you aboard. Thank you very much.